Steve. Thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. And that's the end of music.
And we're done for the
day. You'll get no more music, and you'll like it. Just a quick note, because of the weather, for any science teachers that we're going to wear what the kids like to call floods, please go ahead and wear them. They're very appropriate for today, so don't change your wardrobe because of the weather. It actually turns out to be a perfect choice of pant.
It's pant.
Pant.
It's funny you say that because they're now called capri pants, and even guys wear them.
Yes.
They're not
just
floods.
For science teachers anymore. For everybody now. Steve and I were talking before, we were convening before the show, Wendy, and we decided that this situation is a condition six, so please treat it as such.
Out of a scale of what?
That was my question.
Decided, what do we decide, Steve, 8.5?
8.5, yeah.
Out of 10?
No, it's out of a scale of 8.5. It's a six.
It's way worse than a 5. It's nowhere near as bad as a 7.
No, maybe close to a 6.2.
6.2 is a close. Right. Close call.
It varies, doesn't it, Bill, from moment to moment as the storms go through.
Oh, very much.
All I got to tell you is I'm so thankful I got our basement perma-sealed, because every time it rained in the past,
yeah, you would get it
I
inside.
Would wake up and run downstairs and see 2 feet of water.
Yeah.
So I don't even wake up anymore. I just woke up for work. Not to check the basement at 3 in the morning.
Well, that worked out nice.
Am I the only one who enjoys a good stormy day?
Oh, I love a storm.
It's very romantic.
I love a rainy night.
We're dealing with a lot of standing water and flooding around where I live.
And that's a problem, and I know that some people really got punched.
Oh, yeah.
But
once in a while, it's fine.
Right, if this was every day, it would suck.
You would start to really hate it, yeah.
But
every once in a while, it's nice. Now, the trains, as we were reporting earlier, are way off kilter. I've been taking the train in every morning, and today's train was about 25 minutes late, and they were all backed up for various reasons. They said there were obstructions on the
that's
rails.
That's what happens when you're backed up.
Right. That's one of the things, yeah.
Healthy
yeah.
Trinity.
But then here's what a lady said on the train, and I love this. They make an announcement every day on the train that at certain stops, either the front car or the back car will not be on the platform, because some of the train platforms are bigger and more accommodating than others. So every day they say, at the next stop, the front train will not be on the platform. So they made that announcement today, and a lady behind me said, oh, what else could possibly happen? Like she thought that the platform had been destroyed or something.
Well, you know, they did... Metra showed us some pictures earlier of a rail bed kind of washed away, I think, near Libertyville.
Oh, was it really?
Not washed away, but part of it was washed away, causing some damage.
Really? The lightning woke me up twice last night. It was so vivid that it, right through our shades, it flashed so bright that on two different occasions it woke me up. I thought there were police outside of the house. Again.
I enjoyed the lightning coming in earlier. It was probably like 6-7 o'clock before the storm started. You could see the lightning elsewhere.
Yeah.
So you were just hearing like a tiny dusting of thunder. It wasn't really loud.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, that's heat lightning. And then I was thinking about it. We've all been told there's heat lightning. What the heck is heat lightning?
There isn't heat lightning.
I know. It was just far away, and that's why I wasn't hearing the thunder.
Wait, even though that's something we've all heard of, that does not exist?
No.
Oh.
Tom Skilling or Andy Avalos, because I really...
You need to send... You know how there's a bat signal for Batman? There's got to be some weather signal that gets Tom Skilling that he sees it in the sky. I got to call in. Enough of this nonsense. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Something weather related.
What are
weather
you looking
vane.
Up the heat lightning?
Yeah.
Okay, well, go ahead and do that.
I know grease lightning exists because John Travolta is adamant about that.
A flash or flashes of light seen near the horizon, especially on warm evenings, believed to be the reflection of distant lightning on high clouds.
Right. So it's from another storm far away.
Oh.
Oh. All right, Stickler.
That's what I think.
I hope you're happy, Steve. You've upset Wendy.
Why? It's still lightning. Any less of it.
The only thing she believed in was heat lightning, and now you've taken that away from her.
All right, it's funny because weather.com says heat lightning may be one of the most misused weather terms, and it just shut down my computer.
Oh.
I've just been zapped.
I think Donald Trump Jr. doesn't want you to know the rest.
He can look through my emails. He can share my emails. They're not that exciting. It's one of the most misused weather terms during the summer months, but it's likely not what you think it is. I think Steve Bertrand's going to be right here.
Steve is right.
Many people believe heat lightning is produced by hot and humid conditions, which it was yesterday, lighting up the night sky without any rain or thunder in the immediate area. This theory, completely false, and heat lightning does not actually exist. The flashes of light you are seeing are indeed lightning, but the lightning is from a distant thunderstorm far enough away where the sound of thunder doesn't travel all the way to where you're observing it from.
See, that's what I was curious about, because I always wondered how normally, if there's lightning nearby, you hear a clap of thunder a second or two later, but with what we used to call heat lightning until Steve and heat lightning does, it doesn't exist, you don't hear the thunder. So that would be your separation right there. It just means you're seeing it at a far off distance.
That's it. So, Steve, you win that one. But haven't we all been told that when we were younger?
Yeah.
Like you're out playing on a summer day and then...
Come on in. There's heat lightning.
Right.
Should we go through the things we were told when we were younger?
Yeah. It's all been a lie, hasn't
what
it?
What they all used to call old wives' tales, right? But they're not anymore because the old wives' union got together and said, enough of this nonsense. We're
you're
not
an ageist.
The fall guy anymore for this.
I learned something. See, this is what my goal is each and every day.
Learn a little something?
To learn a little something or to have fun.
Yeah.
Or both.
Yeah.
That's what we try and do. So
well,
thank you,
Steve. Halfway home.
A pleasure. Can I give you a little update? We've been talking about the flash flood emergency in Lake and McHenry counties, and a warning as well was in Cook County, I think, and another as well. They've now extended it. DuPage County is in both of them. A new warning until this afternoon, also now including Kane, Kendall, and Will counties, in addition to those already under warnings.
And some people are without electricity, Steve, or do we not know that
yet?
Yeah,
yes. No, there are, definitely.
In several of the counties.
They are. All right.
And it's hot out there, boy, so if you don't have
it
your
is.
AC, you can come by and we'll blow on you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll think about what we've done and be back in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's raining.
Yeah, it is.
It's going to rain all day. Some places are flooding.
Right.
It's not going to rain all day.
It's the end of... What did you say when I walked in? It's the end of time?
It's the end of days.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want to alarm anybody. I didn't want to seem
you
panicky.
Didn't.
But I kept screaming down the hall, it's the end of days.
It's going to get hot and soupy and muggy
in
already
between.
Is.
Yep.
And then it's going to rain more later.
Yep.
That's good, because I have not been watering my plants, so this is good. We're going to see lots of green grasses out there.
Yeah.
The new sod the village put on the parkway.
Once the water recedes, we'll see the green grass again.
Right.
Green grass of home.
And at some point, Moses will walk down Michigan Avenue and part the Red Sea. That'll be fun to watch.
So you didn't get that much, right, Wendy? I mean,
no.
I can't walk out my back door right now.
Oh,
there's that
really?
Much water back there?
Yeah.
Yeah, we usually will see our backyard be pretty underwater, and it's not like that at all in LaGrange.
Yeah.
So
there are a lot of people who are in dire straits today.
I know. That stinks.
Yeah. Because of the weather, one of the guests that we had scheduled for today may or may not be part of the show. And I'm very disappointed because Kyle Mooney is a regular on Saturday Night Live. He's been on the show for 4 years now, and he's made a very peculiar movie called Brigsby Bear, which I watched last night.
And his whole thing is he doesn't want people to know too much about it. He thinks it's best if you go in to see the movie without knowing anything about it.
He's right. I don't want to give too much away. I'll just say that if you've seen Kyle on Saturday Night Live, he has a knack for playing characters that are not always very comfortable.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Awkward characters.
Yeah. He's kind of cornered the market on those characters. And he outdoes himself in this movie.
Really?
He's really good, and he has surrounded himself with a top-notch cast. There's some great actors in it. Claire Danes is in it. Greg Kinnear is in it.
Mark Hamill?
Mark Hamill is in it. A friend of mine from long ago, Matt Walsh, who's on Veep right now, is in it. Jane Alexander. A whole bunch of really good actors are in it. But it's one of those movies that I liked a lot, but I don't know that this... I know this will sound strange because I enjoyed it, but I can't recommend it to everybody.
I know what you're saying.
Because there's some people that will see it and go, you like this? But I did like it. And I liked how original it was. if he is on today because his plane is delayed because of the weather, I will tell him this. One of the reasons I think I keep getting disappointed in movies, and I love movies.
I know.
I love to go to the movies, but I keep getting disappointed over and over and over. And I think the reason is they've become so predictable. Like, I always know going in, I kind of know five things that are definitely going to happen.
You think too much. You just got to let yourself escape.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. But I don't know what's happened, but almost every time I see a movie now, I walk out of there disappointed, you know? And that didn't happen to me, because in this movie, Brigsby Bear, there's no one in the world that could tell you what's going to happen.
Could Kyle Mooney?
I don't think he could. He made it. He wrote it and starred in it, and I'm not sure. It's just very unpredictable, very quirky, does not follow the traditional rules of movies at all. And those are all good things to me.
Well, if he's not on the show, I will say that he will be live in action tonight at 8:30 at Thalia Hall, 17 years and over show, in case you were thinking of bringing your kids, because I actually was, because my boys love Kyle. They love SNL.
Yeah, he's so good on the show. You know, he came up, like I said, I think this is his fourth year with the show. He came up at a time where there were four or five new cast members all at the same time, and one by one, they just kind of dropped off the show. It just wasn't working, and somehow he found a way to stay, and he keeps getting better and better. They use him in more and more things all the time.
And he's on there with a bunch of friends. Like, he and Beck Beckett were in a YouTube group together.
Yeah.
And this Dave McCary guy who directed Brigsby Bear, these guys have been friends forever, and I think that's just really cute.
Yeah.
I really do.
That they pulled off a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He should be very proud of it, because it's one of those movies that I think, and again, I know I'm overthinking this, but as I was watching the movie and then after it was done, I was trying to imagine the pitch meeting for this, because at some point you have to convince a lot of people to spend a lot of money on your movie. And I can't imagine people hearing what the movie's about and going, yeah, how much do you need? We would love to help you back this movie. Please make this movie and we'll pay for it, because it's so bizarre.
But it was shown at Cannes and Sundance, and then Sony just said, here, we'll pick it up.
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah. When you read the credits, there's some producer names that you'll recognize, some fairly
well-known. I won't recognize them.
Well, Andy Samberg is one of the, he's involved, and there's a couple of other people whose names you go, oh, yeah, all right. So he got some pretty good backing. But it's really weird. As I'm watching the movie, I'm really liking it, and I'm going, I only know a couple of people that I can say, you got to see this movie to. Everybody else will watch it, and they'll go, what happened to you?
You know what another movie is like that? Being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
I told a friend of mine to see it, and she said, oh, my God, I got like 20 minutes into it, and I'm like, what is this? I don't get it. Right. So I know exactly what you mean.
Punch Drunk Love.
Perfect example.
I have not seen that yet.
Oh, you got to see
it. Perfect example.
Would I like it?
I don't know.
I think I would.
I'm not sure.
Now I want to see it, just to see if I like it.
I'm not sure if you would or not.
You've been waiting for about 15 years.
This is Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler's in it, but it's not.
I know, it's not
your traditional
red hooded sweatshirt.
Right. He actually, there's a couple movies he's been in that really show that he's got some acting chops, and I wish so badly he'd make more of those movies instead of him and a bunch of friends going to camp. You know,
I kind
of
like those.
I've seen five of those movies where he and Rob Schneider decide that they haven't been to camp in a long time. They should go to camp. I don't know why he keeps making that movie, but he does.
I think I would like it. What's the premise of?
It's, you know what? Much like Brigsby Bear,
I'm best
it's
not
better
knowing.
To not know.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll watch that. I'm getting backlogged.
Don't you? I see a lot of movies, and every once in a while, I'll somehow be able to escape knowing what the movie's about. I'll just hear good things about a movie,
yep,
and I'll go see it. And I love that, because then there's no expectations at all. You have no idea what's coming at you. I wish it was like that for more movies.
It's like that for all movies for me, because I never know what's coming. I listen to Dean. Those are the only ones I hear, but some squeak by.
Yeah, the more obscure ones. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up next, and then a lot more after that. It's Bill Effen, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I don't think the rain's going to stop anytime soon. Bertrand says it's going to, but it will come back.
Steve's an optimist. That's just the way he operates.
He's half full.
Yeah.
And he's got a tall glass.
Yes.
I'll tell you that.
Yes.
A week from today, we're going to be talking to Tim Ryan, who's in, he's behind A Man in Recovery, From Dope to Hope. All he comes in all he talks about is trying to help people get off of heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Heroin will kill you, whether it be the first time you use it or the fourth time it's going to. So he works with people to help them get treatment if they can't afford it. He will be on next Wednesday to talk about this new reality series, and I think it's on AMC. I saw a trailer for it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks super good.
Mm.
And there's an event going on that I told him I would mention. It's this Sunday, July 16th. Anonapalooza, it's a Hope Outreach and A Man in Recovery Foundation presents. It's the 9th annual. Rain or shine, music, family activities, food, beverages, and more. It's at the Good Templar Park Pavilion in Geneva, Illinois. Anonapalooza, it benefits A Man in Recovery and Hope Outreach. And when you have someone who has some kind of an addiction in your family, there's Al-Anon, if someone's an alcoholic, you go there to help you cope and get through it. And Anonapalooza.com is how you can find out more information. It's happening this coming Sunday, and then he's on next Wednesday. So Anonapalooza.com.
He's a good guy, and he's fighting some very, very tough work. You know, he's doing everything he can to help a lot of people. So we've had him on the show a bunch of times, and it's very inspiring. It really is. So, yeah, please, if you have the chance, go see him. There's a girl I wanted to discuss with you. Her name is Rosa Dominguez. She lives in California, and she has won the California lottery twice in a very short span of time.
How can you cheat? Because is that the first
thing?
Okay.
No, you can't cheat. You know, the lottery is all by chance, and everybody has their own methods, you know, their reasons for picking numbers. It's always fun to be in a 7-Eleven behind somebody who's picking numbers, taking a long time, and explaining to the guy working behind the counter why these significant numbers are chosen and why they'll be the winning numbers.
It's not even that they think it's going to be the winning numbers. Once you play all your kids' birth dates,
right,
and your birth date and maybe your dog's birth date,
right,
you can't stop, because the time you stop, that's the time.
That's when it
comes
up. Yes. Yeah.
So don't do that. Just do quick picks, because really, I'm telling you, this is going to lead you down a life of buying tickets that you probably will never win.
Your odds are the same no matter whatever your methodology is. Your odds are exactly the same. It's all random.
Well, then how did she win twice?
She won twice. Here's the story. Now, once is amazing. I'm not jealous.
Yes, you are. I can tell.
No, I'm not. I don't play the lottery.
I don't either.
As you know, I used to gamble a lot. I used to really enjoy gambling.
I mean, really a lot?
Oh, yeah. I did. I really gambled a lot.
Did you almost lose your house?
No.
So no, it never got catastrophic.
It never got dangerous. But, you know, when I was growing up, on Sundays, I would call a bookie and I would
place. You knew a bookie? I don't even
know
where to go to
bookies.
Get a bookie.
Oh, yeah. You got to get a bookie, Wendy.
I don't need a bookie.
If you want to place a bet, you must have a bookie.
I don't bet.
You just can't go to the bank and go, I want to put $20 on the Chargers, because they'll laugh at you. They'll go, we're not handling any action on the Chargers.
But I agree with you.
Right. That's a good pick. So for a long time, I would make 5 bets on a Sunday for football.
How much a bet? Just ballpark. Like $20?
Yeah.
Sometimes
a little more, sometimes a little less.
What's the most you ever bet?
Oh, that cannot be answered on the air. There was a time where I was betting a lot of money.
Were you winning a lot?
Sometimes, yes.
And that's what kept you
going? But the other times were not as good as when you would win. There were times where the team that you were sure would win by 11 points lost by 6 points. And you go, what? So the bookie that you don't know, you know,
it's for a reason.
Would explain you have to pay. On those instances where you have chosen the wrong team, I demand that you give me the money that we discussed. So
is that why you have a leg injury? Because you didn't pay.
Yeah.
Bet.
Yeah. A guy named Angry Marco explained to me that the money must be handed to him. Well, it went from, you know, once a week on Sundays, then they invented the internet, and all of a sudden you could bet on stuff every day. And then I decided to try that for a while and see what that was like, betting on stuff every day. And like I said, there were really good days, and there were days that did not go very well. So I just decided years ago, this isn't fun anymore. Winning isn't fun anymore, and losing certainly wasn't fun anymore.
But now, what if you just kept winning and you got a real huge stockpile of money? Would you still be gambling today?
It's never happened that way. Even though if you watch any movie about gambling, there's always a scene where somebody goes to Las Vegas and wins a whole bunch at roulette and then takes that money over to the blackjack table and the pile gets higher. And then they play baccarat and the pile gets higher. And then they play craps and the pile gets even higher.
That doesn't really happen.
That doesn't happen. That's just the product of movies.
I am so naive about gambling. I really am. I've been to Vegas once. I won $300 in quarter slots, which was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
But then when I think about it, I probably played about $200. So I'm still 100 up.
Oh, that's not bad.
And that was really exciting. And then, of course, the next day at the airport, you're like, okay, well, I just won $300. I'm going to just sit here until I win again. But then, lo and behold, I didn't win again.
The airport is the worst place in Las Vegas to gamble. It's the absolute worst place. And somebody will always tell you the story, because I've heard the story 50 times from different people. I was here one time at the airport, and a guy gets off the plane, and he puts $1,000 in a machine and wins $10,000 and gets right back on the plane. I've heard that story so many
times. That's not true either.
Never happened. It didn't happen.
I'm so naive about it.
Yeah. But now, the reason I bring this up is, even as a guy who was a degenerate gambler, I knew that your odds of winning the lottery were really slim. And winning it twice, like this girl did, is next to impossible, although it does happen every once in a while.
Every now and then. I have to hear this story.
All right. Rosa Dominguez is one seriously fortunate teen. The 19-year-old. Yeah, she's 19.
God.
She's 19. She just became old enough to gamble, and she hit it twice. Now, here's my advice. If Rosa calls me for advice, here's the advice I will give Rosa Dominguez. Rosa, stop playing the lottery, because most people go their whole lives without winning it once. You've won it twice. Don't play it anymore.
What if she needs a good bookie? Can you set her up?
Yeah, I got a guy. I know a guy okay. that could advise her. He'd be a financial advisor to her. The 19-year-old from California won $655,555. Oh. Wait, did I add an extra digit? $655,555. Recently, after hitting big on two different lottery tickets. Dominguez told the California Lottery that she was heading home from Arizona when she stopped at a gas station in Paso Robles and purchased a few scratchers.
She won this much on scratch-offs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
One of those tickets, a $5 Power 5 ticket, earned her the absolute top prize of $555,555. That's what you win on that.
Where all the fives come from.
That's the catch, yeah. I was so nervous that I wanted to cry, she told the lottery. Everyone's emotion is different when you win.
Nervous? Wouldn't you be happy?
Yes. I wouldn't want to cry.
Oh, I'm nervous.
There's no reason to be nervous.
Powerballs.
Right. You just take a nickel and scratch stuff. Don't be nervous. Still fresh from that win, Dominguez bought another lottery ticket. A $5 Lucky Fortune scratcher a few days later at a gas station in Greenfield. The teen on that one scored the top prize there of $100,000. So neither of these are the, pick six numbers and a Powerball and you win countless millions.
I've won on the scratch-offs.
What did you win?
A free ticket.
Free ticket. Did you quit your job?
Nope.
You should have,
I think I won quit. $50, quite honestly.
See, now they... I'm not a burster of bubbles, Wendy.
Yes, you are. You are the biggest bubble burster.
They have to throw those in to keep people...
Throw it in for me.
Throw more in.
Yeah, I mean, they have to throw it in.
Right.
That's what you're saying. Look at Lucky Rosa.
Lucky Rosa Dominguez, who just keeps winning every time she buys a scratcher. Dominguez says she plans to buy a new car with some of her winnings. We're thinking she should definitely reinvest in some more tickets. Wrong. That's what it says on Huffington Post. I'm here to tell you, Huffington Post, no.
She shouldn't do that. Take your winnings and walk away.
Walk away.
Because I think it's easier to do the first time, but once, like if she does reinvest some of her money and wins again, that's created a cycle that will take her down.
Right. And that's from somebody that
doesn't really gamble,
but even you know that. Because then you get, if you're Rosa Dominguez, if you're young 19-year-old Rosa Dominguez, you say to yourself, well, it's easy. You go to a gas station, in a remote town and you buy a scratch-off ticket and you win. Well, let's do that all day. Let's do that every day. But that's not how it plays out. There's a law of averages.
I kind of play the lucky lotto. I think it used to be the little lotto when there was Powerball. I guess Powerball's back in Illinois, by the way. When there were big Powerball jackpots, those are the days I would go buy the little lotto because I thought everybody was buying the Powerball. And it's like, you know what? I'll take $500,000 or a million.
Still a nice payday.
Yeah. Right. And so I drive around and look for like a remote little convenience store because it's like, this is very Twin Peaks-y. Maybe they'll win, you know, have a winning ticket. That's so stupid.
It is, but when you watch the news with any regularity, that's what you always see on the news, is some guy who's out at some gas station in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
It's never at the one down the street here in downtown Chicago. It's always at some place that has gas and bocce ball, like in upstate Illinois. I don't know where.
I'd like to go there. I'd play bocce and buy a ticket.
Right. Let's take a break. If you'd like to discuss this with us, you know how to reach us, right? We're at 312-981-7200. We'd be happy to hear from you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I want to ask you if you got your free Slurpee at 7-Eleven yesterday.
No, I didn't go.
I didn't either, and I didn't order anything on Amazon Prime for Prime Day.
We didn't do the things we were supposed to do. Those were every American's obligation yesterday was to buy something on Amazon and get a very small Slurpee, and we didn't do either.
I actually went to 7-Eleven, and I did not get a Slurpee.
What? Heaven. Now that's just stupid.
Blasphemous.
Well, there was like four people in line, and I just
four didn't... people.
Yeah.
You impatient millennial.
Yeah.
Our grandparents waited hours in line at 7-Eleven. Back when it was a 5-6.
To pay the water bill.
7-11. Right, to pay the water bill. And see President McKinley go by in a motorcade. It's a long time
with
ago.
With some Beeman's gum.
Yeah,
that's
with
what they
Beeman's
picked up.
Gum.
Or maybe clove.
Kevin.
All right. This explains, you were talking about you used to gamble. I mean, like a lot of money. Like...
Here's what happened. I honestly, when it was just on Sunday, it was manageable. Because worst case scenario, the absolute worst case scenario is I'd lose five games, right? And that's not tragic. But then once it was online, I was finding things to gamble on, sports, every day. You could bet on stuff every day. And I'm like, oh, well, this will be nice. But it wasn't nice.
I am not a psychologist, although John Duffy is coming up at 11 o'clock after the news. But it's I can't find you to be the person to bet on games. Like if you bet because that's someone else performing that you're going to benefit from. Like
right.
if you were betting on your own game, Pete Rose,
right.
or if you were playing cards, that's your own. You're controlling it yourself.
Yeah.
I find it weird that you weren't doing the blackjack stuff more than you were the sporting events.
It was toward the end, the last year or so, it was all sports. And this is the part I still don't understand. I was winning on stuff that I didn't understand. Like I was betting a lot of college basketball, which
have you ever even watched that prior? Or
almost
since?
Not at all. No, and I wasn't watching those games. I would watch the scores. You know, I'd have CBS Sports up, and I'd be looking at sports, going, "Oh, come on, Syracuse, you got to win by six. Come on, Syracuse, you can do this." And I didn't know who was on Syracuse.
Did you have a little like notebook that you used to carry with you?
No, I
and
didn't
a
do
pen
that.
Behind the ear.
I didn't do that.
This is not the Bill Leff I know.
But then the sports that I knew most about, like baseball and tennis, I'd lose at those, which is crazy, right? You'd think, well, bet the stuff you know,
yeah.
not the stuff you don't know. And then somebody explained to me once, if you're betting on baseball, you're a degenerate gambler. And I go, well, why? And it's true, because the importance is not, like with football, you play once a week. So those guys play all out. But in baseball, if you're down by a run or two, you go, we're gonna play again tomorrow. It's not that big of a deal. You know, we don't have to win every game.
We had a little break in our relationship, not that through anything other than we didn't work together. It was this mm-hmm. year, I think I need to be in your life to help
yes,
you.
Yes, that's what was lacking. I said, I need the excitement that Wendy is not providing.
It's
I'm
a
not
gamble
working
with me every day.
It
Come on.
It is a huge gamble. Las Vegas won't even touch that gamble. There's not a casino on the strip that will handle that.
Someone wants to know if this is why your wife, Terry, put you on an allowance.
Yes. Yes, that's the main reason. No, it has nothing to do with that. And I'm not proud of those years because I like to think I'm a smarter person than falling prey to
you
gambling.
Are.
I am.
But, you know, we all have our vices.
But here's what stopped me was it became I was numb to winning or losing. Like there were games, there were days where I would win. I'd win like 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 9. And I had the same exact emotion as when I'd lose all 9 or 10. You know, there was like no difference. And then I went, well, what? I'm not getting anything out of this anymore. So,
where's the excitement?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to do some news, and then you can lay on Dr. John Duffy's couch.
All right.
Clinical psychologist, life coach, author of The Available Parent. He does a podcast, too, Undo Anxiety, and those are really starting to heat up. They're really interesting. You can find him on WGNplus.com or iTunes, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And quick break, and then news time here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder and our biweekly visits with Dr. John Duffy, our friend, a clinical psychologist. Your book, The Available Parent, is very helpful. And Undo Anxiety is your podcast. And I really enjoy listening to those. I learn a lot.
Oh, thanks, Wendy. That means a lot.
And I also learned that I'm not the only one with, you know, things going on in her life.
Which That's is, the idea.
It's kind of good, though. Idea. Don't we all want to know that everyone else's life isn't really that perfect either?
Absolutely. I think we over-idealize people and what goes on behind the perfect door in our town.
Perfect.
And always there's something going on there, you know? So I think we create a lot of anxiety just by thinking, you know, oh, somebody else is perfect. If we were more like that family over there, we'd be better off. And in my experience, you wouldn't trade places with anybody if you knew their story. Right?
Everybody
you
has something, except everybody. The Leff family. They're
Our
perfect.
Family does not, but every other family does.
The Leff family is an outlier.
Yeah. It's ugly to say this phrase, but we're at the midway point of summer. I hate to think about it, but that's where we stand, is the midway point of summer. And you wanted to discuss that a little bit, huh?
I did. I remembered a blog I had written years ago at about the midway point of summer about the importance of a family vacation. And I got a little flack for it because people were saying, well, that's expensive and you have to take time off. Mm-hmm. Why is this such a big deal? And the reason is that you tend to see your family members in a completely different light. So we get stuck in the day-to-day and we might think like, oh, my mom or my dad is such a pain because they're always telling me what to do, or mm-hmm. or my kid never cleans their room. And you never break out of that context and just play together, do something ridiculous together, mm-hmm. go, you know, drive 18 hours a day and have some, you know, horrible adventure. Even mm-hmm. that can be, you know, like something indelible that you'll never forget. And if you never and soundtracks, you know, like I was talking in the green room with a couple of guys and they were talking about like every family vacation kind of has a soundtrack, and there's a game that you play where you're counting, you know, VW bugs or something like that.
You get to punch your brother when you see one.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
right.
Now there's a Prius that? Punch, by the way.
Is there?
That's what's going around with the kids now when you see a Prius.
An electrically charged punch. Is that what that is? I didn't know there was a Prius punch.
Right. So you get this opportunity, right? Even with the Prius punch, you get this opportunity to see your family in a different light. And that might be like, okay, well, that's very nice and all. But the truth of the matter is that almost every family has some difficult times ahead.
Yeah.
And I think these family vacations make you a little resilient to those times, you know, because you've got this to fall back on. Like you remember when you created the in-joke on that vacation.
Yeah.
You can recall it when something's not going perfectly. But if you never take that, like, you know, week-long break out of the year, you never get the opportunity to do that.
Right, right.
Bill and I were just talking about this yesterday. Jimmy Mack, my husband, went on family vacations every year, and he was talking about one, and I said, how old were you? And he said, I don't know, 18 or 19. And I'm like, you were still going on family vacations at that age? I was a little surprised, but I have an 18 and 14-year-old, and they still like to hang with us. Bill, you still travel with your family.
Yeah, we do one or two trips a year, all four of us, and it's
and
the
they're
best.
20.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can't afford to do a vacation, we wanted to go to Nashville this year. We decided to get our basement fixed instead. But we went to the Rolling Stones exhibit. We did an architecture tour. We go to our private beach club. These are all little one-day inexpensive things that you still create those memories and that bond.
Absolutely. You know, I'm still struggling with the word staycation. But yeah. just there's something cheesy about
too
that.
Too cute.
Too cute, maybe.
It,
yeah.
is. It is.
Yeah. Yet, I totally agree. Like, you know, if you can't protect the time, or there's just the, you know, finances are too tight, we're in Chicago. There's an awful lot to do here, right? The Rolling Stones exhibit, the Navy Pier, just coming downtown and walking up and down Michigan right. Avenue. You can create those moments. So, you know, there is no family, I don't think, anywhere that can't protect a few days to create those moments sometime during the year. And they're really important. I think they're really critical to the health of a family.
Well, here's what it does also is, this is obvious, but it creates a highlight reel. Like when you think of your own childhood and you think about the happiest times, for most people, a lot of it will be a vacation or several vacations that you took. And I know for my own kids, now that they're 20, I think about when they were really little or in grade school or in high school and where we went. Those are like some of the best times of my life.
Yeah. And the kids I work with, the times that they remember are never the times like, you know, remember that one time when we were sitting in the basement playing, you know, Crash Bandicoot or something. Yeah. It's yeah. always about being out there doing something different,
right.
you know? And so you're right. It creates this highlight reel of childhood that probably 20 years down the road, it gives you something to fall back on. So, you know, if Thanksgiving is tense, you can say, right. hey, remember that time 20 years ago when we were, you know, yeah. in the middle of nowhere?
The last time we had
ran
fun
out of gas.
20 years ago. Remember that time?
But right. I want to focus on something, too, because a lot of times on a family vacation, something will go terribly wrong. My youngest son, Dylan's first trip to Disney, he arrived at Disney and brought lice with him from his school. So we had to go to the nurse's station at Disney World, the happiest place on earth. He was on the wrong ADHD meds and would take a 2-hour nap in the middle of Disney. And it wasn't fun. And it was kind of bad at the time. But now it's funny because I listen to the kids say, oh, remember that time mom came at you with the lice medication and you growled at her? It's like even bad things come back as kind of a good memory.
I totally agree. Don't give too much credence to when things go perfectly, because you're probably going to forget that. You
yeah.
know, it's,
right.
it's when things go askew, that's when you remember it. Like, how did we make it through that, you know, that nightmare where he was on the wrong medication and he had its nap during the day, and yet you can go back and you can laugh at it in retrospect.
Disney on lice. That's what we call that vacation.
Yes, perfect. All right, we'll take a quick break. Dr. John Duffy's here. Want to talk to us? We're 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is our guest. The Available Parent is his book. If you haven't read it, pick it up. It's a great read. John, earlier in the show, Wendy and I were discussing gambling. One of us had a slight gambling problem. It was me.
Okay. Spoiler alert.
You have dealt with people in similar situations.
I have. In the past few years, I've dealt with a number of people, all of them men, for whatever that means. It's a small sample size, but it's all been men.
I bet women like to spend their money and get something right there in return, like an item.
Oh,
I really think that probably
has
something to do
with
it. I bet
there is something to that. Yeah, yeah. And it might fulfill some of the same needs that I think gambling, what looks like gambling addiction, does for men, because oftentimes I don't see it as an addiction like per se, but like a diversion from depression and anxiety, and doldrums of everyday life, you know, as a distraction, you know. I can't say that I've worked with one guy who said he was excited about gambling, you know. Most of them were mortified, ashamed if they were deep in debt and in trouble and gambling every day as opposed to just gambling recreationally.
Does it have something to do with someone who, you know, does the same job every day and comes home and has pretty much the same dinner every day and the same routine? They don't have a lot of spark or excitement, so that is something that will add that spark or excitement, or is that nothing to do with it?
Well, I actually think that's a different kind of like a presentation of it, because some people really want to make a different life for themselves and magically think like, oh, if I win the lotto or if I win out at the casino, that's going to change everything for me, you know. And there's
yeah.
a fallacy woven in that, because even people who win tend to fall back into their same ways, tend to lose the money that they make. There's kind of like really, really sad statistics around that.
Yeah. I read something years ago, because I was trying to understand why it was so attractive to mm-hmm. me. And I read something about how a gambler is almost more stimulated in losing than they are in winning, because they kind of expect to lose. And when that expectation becomes reality, they go, oh, yeah, I knew I was going to lose, and there I lost.
Right.
And then they place another bet.
Well, in a way, the casino is set up like, you know, behavioral psychology. It's like, you know, this intermittent reward, right?
Yeah.
But by and large, you're going to lose, right?
Right?
So when you win, there's a little goose. There's a little thrill to that, right?
Right.
That
right.
you wouldn't feel if you were winning on a real regular basis.
Well, there's so much to what they do. There's no clocks in casinos. They pump oxygen in.
Is that really true?
It's really true.
I believe that's true.
Yeah.
Yes. For what reason? It's just really to give true. You more, so you don't
more
get
energy.
Tired?
They keep bringing you free drinks.
Why don't
drinks.
They do that here during our show?
They should, they should definitely pump oxygen in during the show. They keep bringing you free drinks. There's colors and bells and whistles going off all around you. There's all these things that make your brain, just even if it's for a second,
it stimulates it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. 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 No, the environment itself is so carefully created, right? Because every sense is supposed to be simulated in a casino. So that, and the idea is, and I think this is what you're both getting at, to keep you there, to keep you in there. And that's part of the intermittent reward is like, you know, okay, I just lost six times in a row. I'm bound to win this right. next time, right? The odds say I'm going to win now, you right. know? And that may very well happen. And then you're likely to think like, okay, this is a lucky machine. Which is a fallacy, right? Yeah. There is no lucky machine. And so you're likely to sit tight thinking, you know, this one's going to hit somehow. It's going to hit big.
Yeah.
Someone has texted us, and I don't know that you said gambling is not an addiction, because someone says it certainly is an incredible high and destroys family, but gambling is indeed an addiction. It is to some people.
Absolutely. No, and I didn't mean it's not an addiction in the same way that, say, alcohol or heroin or something can be an addiction. But
how is it different? I'm curious how it's different.
Because those addictions tend to be more physical than mental and emotional. And gambling is an emotional addiction.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and so it's not like your body needs it and craves it,
right.
but your mind feels as if it does.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a few other things that kind of sex addiction, for example, fits under that kind of umbrella.
Yeah.
You know, where
more
it's
emotional.
Not, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, more emotional than physical. So
how is it some people, and I consider myself very fortunate to where once I decided to stop, I just stopped. And
right.
I didn't miss it at all.
Yeah.
Like for a lot of addictions, you have to wean yourself off of it and stuff. I just stopped and that was the end of it. How is that possible?
You know, you gamble like I think my wife gambles, where she literally goes in and it's strictly recreational for her.
Yeah.
Winning and losing is secondary to enjoying the process,
right?
Right? So, and she would never put more on the table than she's very comfortable losing.
Yeah.
And I suspect you're in the same realm. And so,
yeah.
in a way, it's a sport, right? And
right.
you want to win the sport. You want to somehow beat the system,
yeah.
right? And that's different than I need to, or I need something to come out of tonight that makes me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
And that's what I asked you. You know, gambling quite frequently. Do you find that you can gamble now and do it in small doses and walk away? Because, you know, quitting smoking for 6 years and then going out with the girls at a party who just smoke at parties back to a pack a day.
Sure.
I mean, you
yeah.
know, I can never have a cigarette again.
And there's stimuli associated with that, too, right? It's the smells and the atmosphere, and that draws you back in. And even the social elements of
yeah.
smoking. Yeah.
But gambling, you can go, like, do some slots and...
I've been in casinos 3 times in the last 9 years, for each time for either an hour and a half. I didn't get overly excited. I wasn't upset. I just, you know, $10
That's
here,
awesome.
$5
yeah.
there. And yeah, there was no urge. Like, in the old days, if I went to a casino, I go, I gotta come back tomorrow. This is too much fun to not come
right.
back the next day.
right.
But or placing bets online. Once I was done, I was already looking at the next day's lines for what I was going to bet. That's gone.
Do you think there was another need that was another way that need was fulfilled in you? You know what I mean? Did something take its place?
No,
yeah.
I don't think so. I can't think of anything that did.
Yeah. So it probably just suggests that, you know, in the way that the texter is suggesting, like, no, this can very well be an addiction. It probably never was for you. It was probably a thrill.
Just a recreational. Yeah,
yeah,
kind of, I guess. I mean, it was exciting to watch scoreboards and go, well, I'm going to make $20 there. I'm going
right.
to make $50 there. That was exciting. But then at some point I just realized this is, it's nowhere near the fun that I want out of this.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
more trouble than it is fun.
Well, and some of the people who I would say have been addicted to it have recognized, like, boy, I'm really not even betting on things I care about,
right.
you know, or things I understand and know about.
College basketball, for instance.
That's what I was making most of my money on. And I don't care about college basketball at all.
What a great example, right? So,
yeah.
So what did you get out of those bets?
Just that momentary, hey, I picked the right team.
Yeah.
I figured out how to win you know, it's, there's a point spread involved. So I knew that team would win, but I didn't know if they'd win by 11, but they did, so I get $50.
So truly a game.
Yeah, it was a game.
Yeah, that you wanted to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you my Candy Crush app. You can just start doing that.
Thank you. Thank you. But no, there's people, Wendy's kidding, but there are people that haven't, I mean, as silly as it sounds, they can't stop playing that.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm on like level 1900.
Wendy's one of those people,
yes,
John.
I might be.
Clearly.
I have been 1900. I haven't been doing it as much anymore, but there was a time where it's like, you know, I do it probably every day, but I used to do it for hours at a time. Now I do it just to clear my mind, and then I put it down and watch TV and do other things.
And I think Candy Crush for a lot of people, and there's a lot of games that fulfill that need, right? It's almost like watching TV. It's a way to decompress at the end of a day, right?
Right.
And take your mind into a completely different zone. And
so not necessarily a bad thing,
no,
just a
not,
thing.
In moderation, not necessarily a bad thing. Even gambling in moderation, I think, is not necessarily a bad thing, provided you can afford it and it's not taxing your mental well-being.
Somebody explained to me once that an addiction becomes a problem if you're missing your job because of it.
Yep.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Or your family suffers.
Yeah. If it disrupts the functioning of your life, your family's life, then you've got a problem that you have to address. If it doesn't, then you can probably get away with doing what you're doing, and it's a reasonably healthy diversion.
All right. So we've learned all things in moderation, maybe not all things. And take family vacations. A quick text before we let you go, Dr. Duffy. On the road to Hana in Hawaii, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Two young sons in the back seat. Younger one accused the older brother of sharpening his toenail to claw him all the way on the road to Hana. Now at age 28, he still claims that was his best idea ever and best vacation. So see, things that go wrong can all of a sudden turn into this wonderful memory.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
Dr. John Duffy, you can find him at drjohnduffy.com. You can listen to his podcast, Undue Anxiety. It's on WGN Plus or iTunes, wherever your favorite podcasts are found. And also pick up The Available Parent, and we're looking forward to your next book. Is that coming out anytime soon?
I'm hoping to have it out by the end of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
If all goes well.
Thanks, John.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next, then more show. It's Bill Effin and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Thank you, Kim. Phil, you just returned from your nor'easter.
I was in Maine for 5 days, but only three nights. Isn't that weird? I can't figure out why it was.
You're
so weird.
I think
it'd be closer to the same, but it wasn't.
You're very weird. I saw something in the news. There was a 20-pound lobster found in Maine. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Do they have it on display anywhere? Did they have a picnic and a bunch of people could take...
No, but a 20-pound lobster is... That's.
Would you be in heaven?
Yeah, that would be my version of heaven. I love a good lobster.
Do you think it would be good, or you think it would be like old and chewy?
Kim, I've thought about that, and I don't know the answer.
Old and chewy, which one do you want to be?
You know, when you eat lobster in a restaurant, you usually get about a pound and a half is your average-sized lobster. So a lobster that big, I don't know that it would affect the flavor. I couldn't. I couldn't.
What do you mean you couldn't?
I couldn't. I just feel like if
you're the one person in the world who can eat 20 pounds.
To be, maybe.
Did you have lobster rolls every day?
Yes.
Oh, I would.
Yes. And they were always good. Always good. Lobster rolls every day for lunch. Lobster for dinner two nights. A couple nights I didn't. One of the waitresses talked me into, I love duck also. And I said, what would you get? They had a lobster prepared a special way, duck prepared a special way, and there was a third option. She goes, you got to get the duck. But everybody else I was eating with got the lobster, and I'm looking around going, what?
You had order envy, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did. I'm in Maine. What am I messing around with duck for? There's lobster.
I can't believe you did the duck.
Oh, the lobster was good everywhere.
Are there Maine ducks?
Not that I've seen.
That's why I make Jim get the same thing I get, because I don't want to have
Do
order
you
envy.
Do force him to get the
well,
same
no,
thing?
Typically, we both have the same issue, so we'd like to get the same thing because we're worried, you know, oh, yours is so much better than mine.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a favorite place where we know what we
right.
like, and then you're on your own.
Last year, there's a restaurant in Ogunquit that we love. It's one of our all-time favorites, and they have lobster prepared so many different ways, and one of the ways is lobster mac and cheese. And I got it last year, and it was incredible. So in that same restaurant, I go, would you go with this kind of lobster, lobster mac and cheese, the duck, or something else? She goes, you got to get the duck. And then my brother-in-law was there, and he got the lobster mac and cheese. And on every bite he does this, he takes a bite, he goes, like it was just so good. He couldn't hold back.
Your duck must have looked bad, too, because he was just rubbing it in.
In all honesty, the duck was good. But when you're there, why would I be talked out of the lobster?
I don't eat duck.
I wasn't thinking clearly.
That is weird. No, I know you like duck, but you're in Maine.
Right. So go with what you're famous for, right?
Duck, duck, lobster.
Don't you hate when you have buyer's remorse in a restaurant? I get so mad. It's just the worst. And then when they convince you, and then you're like, you know what? I know my gut. Like,
right.
I know what I want to eat.
But didn't we learn somewhere, don't get what the wait staff is pushing because that means they have a lot
There's too much of it. They're trying to get rid of it. Well, then, you know, because of restaurant etiquette, and I know because we eat out a lot, right? Almost every night. Terry doesn't cook. I don't cook. So almost every night. So when she came by, she goes, how's that? Are you loving that duck? Yeah.
Why didn't you say I'm not loving it?
I've made a mistake here, ma'am. I've made a horrible, horrible mistake.
I get yelled at for that, too, because then I got a Denver omelet, and they put American cheese instead of cheddar.
Oh, that's not a Denver omelet.
No, and the waitress came by and said, how is everything? And I said, well, it's not cheddar cheese. It's American, but it's still pretty good.
Right.
And she goes, oh, well, come on, I'll make you another one. And I said, no, I mean, my family's halfway finished.
Yeah.
I'll just eat it.
Yeah.
And Jim says to me, why did you tell her that if you didn't give her a chance to fix it?
That's a good question.
Because I just wanted her to know, next time you see me,
right.
You better get it right.
Right. Just for future reference, when I come in and ask for a Denver omelet, do it the right way.
I mean, it was acceptable, but it wasn't awesome like usual. And we go to this place a lot. So I think I just said it like, you know, don't screw me next time.
Right. For future reference, this is what I get when I get a Denver omelet.
All right. The 20-pound lobster that was found, I totally thought of you because you were on vacation at the time. And, Tom, you know, Kim Gordon raised the question, would it be tastier or less tasty? What do you think?
I went down to Cozumel a couple of times, and you could pick your lobster out of the tank that you wanted to eat, and the smaller ones were more tender. The bigger they get, I think the tougher they get, and I don't think they have the taste.
I've heard that. Many people have said that. Are you able to pick? Because I've been in restaurants where you'll pick one, and it's like, it's Sophie's choice.
Yeah,
I can't do that.
Point to one.
Right, exactly. And the same thing with Thanksgiving turkeys. I used to go with the 24, 25, 20, because it's a lot. But I like the 18, 19 pounders because they're more tender.
Yeah.
I am so with you on that. And the solution to that is then you get a side breast.
Exactly. Right. If you got a lot of people,
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, yeah, you get a smaller, instead of getting a 24-pound turkey, you get a 19, and then you get like a 7-pound breast.
Yeah.
And a side breast.
This feels like TMZ.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom knew when to bail. Tom, very smart caller. He knew when to get out. He's like, I got friends listening. I can't be a part of this.
The sick thing is you can't bail. No. You're stuck with me till 1 o'clock.
Right.
I know you feel like it sometimes. Mike is here. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good. We're talking about order envy. Bill got the duck.
You know, my dad taught me a long time ago, if you go to a restaurant and the sign on the front door says Jim's Steakhouse.
Yeah.
You should order steak.
Right.
Don't order chicken.
That's why they're famous.
If it says Al's Beef, then don't order chicken, you order beef, right?
I mean, right.
Your dad was a wise man.
If I follow that rule and I love to eat, I'm never disappointed with my meal.
Mike, when you go to Panda Express, get
no!
the panda.
You got to order panda.
Get the orange panda.
Bye. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. And real quickly before we take a break, Arthur's here. Hi, Arthur. You're from Maine. You have some inside intel on lobsters?
Yes. The smaller the lobster, the better it's going to taste and more tender it is.
Really?
As they get older, they get really tougher and more durable because they've, you know, lived longer. But
so a 20-pound lobster would be horrible.
I don't think it'd be horrible. It's still lobster, but
yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Smaller is better, Wendy.
Where did you go in Maine?
Ogunquit.
Ogunquit. Did you go through Falmouth? Do you remember going?
Not on this trip, but I have in the past.
Oh, okay. Because we own a store called Town Landing Market. If you're ever there, let us know.
That's the place. All right. Say the name one more time. What is it?
Town Town Landing Market.
In Thalmas. All right. I'll take you up on that.
On the water.
All right. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks, Arthur. Appreciate it.
How's your hypothalamus?
It's been better. I don't want to talk about it. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show, believe it or not. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to dive in. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're going to go over to the stream at 12 noon, and it looks like we are going to talk to Kyle Mooney of SNL, and his new movie, Brigsby Bear, I believe, opens in Chicago in August. He'll be at Thalia
August
Hall tonight.
August 4th in Chicago, July 28th on the coasts, on New York and Los Angeles, July 28th.
And his flight is delayed because of the weather, and I guess tonight's show at Thalia Hall is sold out.
Oh, it is. All right.
Good for him.
So get your tickets a week ago. Hurry up.
So we'll talk to Kyle Mooney sometime during the stream of consciousness. We were talking about Maine. You were just there, and while you were there, known for her no-nonsense attitude and sense of humor, Florence Bierce celebrated her 100th birthday last week.
Oh, I didn't know that. Happy birthday, Florence Bierce.
She did have a birthday party. It was at the Westgate Center for Rehabilitation and Alzheimer's Care in Bangor, Maine. Bierce did not shy away from sharing her secret to long life. Would you like to know it?
I don't know what it is yet, but I do know that anytime anyone reaches that age, you know, sometimes they'll ask you at 90, sometimes at 100 or so, they go, there's got to be something that you're doing every day. And it's usually some sort of alcoholic beverage or something that's borderline dirty. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, bacon's usually involved in there, too.
Sometimes it's bacon. Sometimes they do something with bacon that seems obscene. I don't know what it is, but it works for people. What's her secret?
It is always something that we tend to think is bad for us. And then, you know, this woman, Florence Bierce, like hearse. I don't know.
Yeah.
Florence Bierce.
Tell her that at the age of 100. Your
she
name rhymes with hearse.
She doesn't realize. I guess
that'll
maybe not.
That'll be fun to share with her.
We'll say Bierce then. She said the secret to her long life as she celebrated her 100th birthday last week. One word, wine.
Yeah. See, it's the weirdest thing.
She says, quote, I like my wine. Don't take it away from me.
Oh.
She is originally from Massachusetts. Spears said it did not take long to find the beauty of Maine. She said, Maine is beautiful. I tell everybody you want a trip, go to Maine.
She's right.
Bierce ran a restaurant in LaGrange, Maine, where she dedicated her life to serving others.
Yeah.
The people have taken me, I think. They understand me that I'm crazy, she joked.
All right. What does that mean, the people have taken me?
I don't know.
Did she think she was being kidnapped when they took her to her birthday party?
I don't know. She's 100.
Florence, it's just we have cake and candles. We're not kidnapping you.
Bierce spent
ransom.
Much of her time joking around during the party, which was complete with birthday cake, balloons, and gifts. They don't mention if they had the wine that she wanted.
Oh.
But how cool is that, to be goofing around at your 100th birthday
party? It's
very
cool.
And she even had more advice for those looking to make it as far as she has, to live to 100. Not only do you need wine in your life, but her quote that I'm going to get on a T-shirt, it says, don't take any baloney.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. So what is it, like we said, so many people, once they become 80, 90, 100, 105, whatever, they always say, here's what you got to do. You got to read the Bible every day, read a passage in the Bible, and they go, and also scotch. Like, they always find something in there that you go, wait, you're 100 and you're drinking scotch every day? There's always something in there that you go, that doesn't fit the person who's 100.
I think, you know, it's 99 years of healthy living is probably what it is. So if you're living healthy and you have one glass of wine a day,
yeah. How
is that going to hurt you?
It probably relaxes you.
It's
right?
Probably good for you, lowers your blood pressure. Although
yeah.
The studies, and that's why sometimes you really have to be careful what these studies say. Because remember, for a while it was like drinking wine is bad for you, and then drinking red wine is really
right.
good for you, no more than two glasses a day, and then
right.
they come back and say, yeah, it's not that good, it's white wine.
Right.
So they keep changing it. I say, you know, do what you want in moderation.
Right. When I become 100, Wendy, and they ask me this question, they're going to go,
what's
the secret?
That's what you're going to say.
I'm going to say that in about a week. But when they say, Phil, you're 100, and your partner, your radio partner, Wendy, died so long ago, but you are still here.
You're a jerk.
You're 100 years old. What's the secret?
I'm not even listening.
I'm going
to
say
anymore.
Every day I bite the head off a rabbit.
You're not, but see, that's stupid because you don't really do it.
I know, but they'll think because I'm 100, they'll go, well, he's not messing with us. The guy lived to be 100. What wise sage he is.
I don't want to wish ill will on you.
But if you, in public.
No, I not even in private. But if you live to be 100 and that's the stupid comment
yeah,
you say.
I'm going to say something like that.
I'm going to, if I live to 100, which I, there's no way I will, I'm going to tell all reporters not to interview you. I'll send it out like in the next 10 years and say, okay, keep this name in mind. If he reaches it 100 years of
don't
age.
Don't talk to him.
Don't ask him
what
anything.
What if I said this? Every day I have a Pez sandwich. I have a giant sandwich made of just Pez.
Do you?
Not every day.
Well, then you'd be a liar.
Yeah, but once you're 100, they just want to do
think.
The story and move on. I'll be talking to Dane Placco, and he's like, I just need some quick B-roll, and I'm out of here.
You think Dane Placco is still going to be around when you're 100?
Yeah, he will be.
I don't know. Dave, do you have an older uncle who does something every day?
Yeah, I have an uncle. He's 85. He's a retired Marine, but he's still doing like 500 sit-ups a day. The guy is like the best ship I've ever seen.
At 85?
Yeah, he does them crunches. He puts his feet under the bed, and he does, you know, not all at the same time, but... I mean, every morning I'm like, holy mackerel, the guy's still playing golf and still getting around. So,
500?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess when you've been doing it for...
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, but, I mean, the weird thing is you're talking about what you eat or what you don't, but there's days when he's eating chips and Mountain Dew at breakfast. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
But it's not every day, right, Dave?
Well, the day I went to breakfast with him, he's like, yeah, let's stop here. We stop at the corner store. He's getting himself a large Mountain Dew and some Doritos, and he's like, that's his breakfast.
You can't even argue with him because he's doing something right if he's that old and he's in that kind of shape, right?
Yeah, I mean, he only had his first surgery that I know of like a couple years ago, and I had, you know, I was like just taken back. I just hope I get the same genes.
Yeah, that's great.
Was he married, Dave?
No, he never got married, never had kids, so I, you know, maybe
that's probably why he's going to live
longevity.
So long.
No stress.
Yeah.
Dave, thanks, Dave.
Thanks for calling. Have a good one. Tell him we said hello.
All right, bye.
All right, take care.
500 sit-ups is a lot.
That's impressive.
That's a lot.
85. Wow. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Wendy and I are headed toward the stream. We'd love for you to join us. We believe Kyle Mooney of Saturday Night Live
confirmed.
Will be. Oh, he is?
12:15.
All right, excellent. So stick around for that. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.